This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files, podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
Jim Mars was born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. Jim has been tracking down facts and trying to make sense of political stories in America since his college days as a journalism major at the University of North Texas in Denton. He graduated in 1966 and began a newspaper reporting and editing career, first at the Denton Record Chronicle, then the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, and Fort Worth Star-Telegram, where he was an investigative reporter and cartoonist and earned photography awards. By 1988, he decided that he had to put his big file about President John F. Kennedy's assassination into a book. The result was an instant classic called Crossfire. 2 months after its release in 1989, Jim received a call from Hollywood film director Oliver Stone, who wanted to option Crossfire for the movie that became JFK. Jim Mars began asking book editors and others what each thought would be the next big, deep, dark secret government cover-up beyond the JFK assassination. He heard the answer UFOs. As Jim began to nose around for more UFO information, he stumbled onto the government's efforts to produce psychic spies. Spies who could remote view anywhere in the world, in the skies, underwater, and even out to Mars and Jupiter, and return with facts beyond the intelligence of normal agents trudging through fields, streets, agencies, and corporations. I remember the depressed telephone call I received from Jim after he thought his Psi-Spies manuscript had been accepted for publication and then was canceled for mysterious reasons. As a celebrated and successful author, Jim suspected a deliberate government block to keep the highly strange Enigma files by remote viewers about UFOs away from the public and media. Frustrated by the block but determined to keep going, Jim completed his second book, Alien Agenda, which was successfully published in 1997. Alien Agenda raised the question, who would speak for Earth if non-humans finally arrived in public? Trying to answer that question led Jim to write Rule by Secrecy, published in 2000. In that important book, Jim Mars made links between the money-power elite of America with the money-power elite of Europe, all linked back to the money-power elite of Mesopotamia, which might have been under the control and manipulation of non-human entities with their own agendas on this planet. By then, Jim realized he had produced his own unplanned trilogy about government secrecy, cover-up, manipulation, and control. The next year, the trade towers in New York City and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. were attacked. After 9/11, the world has never been the same, and the horror of it all provoked Jim to ask questions about who exactly was behind the September 11, 2001 attacks, and why the government prefers to keep remote viewing secret.
9/11 happened, and I jumped on top of that and produced a book called The War on Freedom, which, again, was mysteriously canceled, yet I was paid all of the advance. It's like, take the money and go away. We don't want to hear about this. And that eventually was published as Inside Job, and then that was picked up by another publisher and published as the book that's now currently available, The Terror Conspiracy. You can see how it all kind of flows together.
And comes up and culminates so far with Psi-Spies in 2007.
Right. We're finally getting the word out about remote viewing. And I will give you a heads up. I have a book in now to HarperCollins. And if it doesn't go the way of suppression and censorship, it'll be out next year. And we won't go into this one, but my working title is The Rise of the Fourth Reich.
In this country, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And its association with the historic Nazi past.
That's right. And I've heard this all the way back to the 60s and the hippies who were talking about fascism and America with a K. And I always thought that was just radical rhetoric. But when I did the research, I found that the very same people, companies, corporations that were behind Hitler are now running this country.
And Jim, it's fair to say, I believe, that the same implications of some sort of obsession by Hitler with a blonde, blue-eyed super race and the observations by English intelligence of silver disks rising out of Peenemünde in the 1920s has always fueled the question, was Hitler in association with some sort of a non-human group with advanced non-human technology?
Well, I actually addressed that, and here's some information that you may not be aware of. There's been many books written and movies made about the connection between the Nazis and occult practices, that they were heavily involved in the occult. Any science that's not clearly understood can be assumed to be magic or occultism. But during the 30s and into the war, within the German military was an umbrella organization simply known as Dr. Greenbaum or Dr. Green Tree. Apparently a reference to the tree of knowledge in the Garden of Eden. And within this Dr. Greenbaum was a group known as MAJIK, M-A-J-I-K. Apparently MAJIK had to do with advanced propulsion technology, and of course I can't help but wonder if that was not brought over here and was the genesis for our Majestic 12 or MAJIK 12 as it was originally called, M-A-J-I-C. The group in the United States has been in charge of sequestering and keeping control over UFO technology. But also under Dr. Greenbaum was psychic studies. In my new book, Psi Spies, I was dealing strictly or trying to deal strictly with the U.S. Army's functional and operational group of military intelligence officers who were trained in the methodology of remote viewing. And let me make the distinction here. Remote viewing is not necessarily psychic ability. We all have psychic ability. Remote viewing was an attempt to control and bring on this psychic ability on demand through a structured series of protocols. And basically what it did, Linda, was allow the very psychic right hemisphere of the brain to communicate with the not-at-all psychic left hemisphere of the brain.
What I wondered is if you could explain the transition from what was experimentation at Stanford with Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ and Ingo Swann to a more formal program called ScanAid that was under the Central Intelligence Agency.
Well, let's go back to about 1970. A book was published called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, and it achieved some level of popularity, but it particularly rang alarm bells in the halls of Langley and in the halls of the Pentagon. Now, the attitude there was, we don't believe in this stuff, but if the commies are doing it, by God, we got to do it too. And so they began to throw some money at psychic research simply as a reaction to studies that were being done behind the Iron Curtain. ScanAid simply was an acronym for scanning by coordinate. And they still use the term coordinates, but then it was actually longitude and latitude coordinates. And they would pick a random set of coordinates, have a viewer say, what's at this location? And for example, if the coordinates were for the North Pole and the viewer says, well, I see all white and it's cold and the wind's blowing and I see a bear and it's white, well, then, you know, they knew he was on target. But they moved away from that fairly rapidly, and they still use coordinates. In fact, there is a protocol called coordinate remote viewing. But the coordinate is not a true coordinate. It's simply a set of numbers representing the target, because the problem, of course, is if I want you to go remote view the Eiffel Tower, if I tell you go remote view the Eiffel Tower, you've automatically got a picture of the Eiffel Tower because you've seen pictures, films, or you've been there. So you can't front load the viewer, and so they are given simply a set of numbers that represents the target. And then since at some point whoever wrote those numbers down knows what the target is, then psychically they're able to pick up from those target numbers the target, and if they're good, if they're practiced, they can actually go right to that target. So from there, they did all the experimentation out at Stanford Research Institute, and it was repetitive. It was over and over, testing over and over and over again. In fact, the remote viewing has been termed the most severely scientifically studied experiment in history. And I think that could be true because there were literally hundreds of people involved in this. And for a period of years, it was just unremitting test, test, test. And what they finally did was prove that, yes, something was going on. And statistically, it went way above the law of averages on guessing. And so at this point, the CIA, who was already beginning to get in trouble because of assassination plots and drug running and a few other things, decided that they better get rid of anything that might cause them a public relations problem. And the Army was standing there waiting to take over. So they said, we'll take it. And they moved it into Intelligence and Security Command out of Fort Meade, Maryland. And that is where the original unit, which went through a variety of code names, Center Lane, Grill Flame, Stargate, Sunstreak, and that's where the Army's remote viewing unit started, and this is where they were using them operationally to go spy on potential enemies of the United States.
And that was in the 1980s?
That would have moved up into the late 1970s, and that persisted well on up into the 90s. By the early 1990s, the Defense Intelligence Agency had gotten involved and was also getting information. In fact, a lot of different agencies and organizations came to get information from the SciSpy unit. But according to them, the big problem is that nobody would ever take it seriously. When one of our CIA officers was kidnapped over in the Middle East, they were asked to find out where is he, and they did find out where he was, but nothing was done about it because of the mindset of the people in control, which is, well, Linda, you and I pretty much grew up in the same era that, you know, Apollo mission, Sputnik, space, science, technology, wow, you know, that was it. And basically we were conditioned that psychic ability is, and that's just strange, that's woo-woo, and that doesn't exist. And so it's been a tough climb getting over that, although recent advances in quantum mechanics and quantum physics tend to more and more show us that the entire universe is nothing but one big, huge mass of energy, of which we're all part. And obviously, if someone has a thought or if there's something existing in the universe, then it's on this universal energy grid. And if anyone is sensitive enough, psychic enough, if you will, intuitive, they can actually access the universal grid. And to me, that provides the framework for understanding how remote viewing works.
Remote viewing has demonstrated that it could find anything if applied correctly. Has it been applied to find Osama bin Laden?
Excellent question. And first, let me preface the response, which I think is going to raise your eyebrows, by saying that Osama bin Laden, who has been blamed by the government for being the mastermind and the instigator of the horrendous attacks on September the 11th, 2001, has yet to be charged with anything. In fact, the FBI, on his wanted posters, do not even list 9/11 as one of the crimes that they want him for. And when asked about that, an FBI spokesman said, well, frankly, we don't have any hard evidence that he was behind 9/11. And that is the absolute gospel truth. No charges have been filed against him. And in fact, in mid-2002, not even a year before the first anniversary of 9/11, at a press conference, President Bush was asked about Osama bin Laden. And he said, and this is almost a direct quote, he said, well, we hadn't heard from him in a while, and frankly, I'm not that concerned about him anymore.
But have you talked with any professional remote viewers who have talked to you off the record about looking for Osama bin Laden and saying this is where he is?
Okay. Can remote viewing locate Osama bin Laden? Absolutely, yes. A former trainer of the Army's remote viewing SISPAS unit was in New York on the morning of 9/11 and, needless to say, was quite upset with what had happened. He told me personally that he contacted people deep within the government and told them, he said, "You give me the word, I will locate Osama bin Laden." And he was told, "No, no, no, don't do that. We don't want that."
And when he said, "Why not?" what did they say?
Well, he didn't ask them why not. He knew better, and they don't want bin Laden caught because bin Laden is the boogeyman they have to hold over our head to keep everybody fearful and divided and hence under tight control.
I understand that, and I would agree with that conclusion, but I am assuming that there are professional remote viewers who have tried to remote view where he is.
First, you have to understand that there is no cohesive remote viewing unit anymore. So there's not one group that you could go to and say, go find him. It would be a variety of individuals. And whether they have individually gone out and tried to find bin Laden, I'm just unaware of that.
Okay. Let's move to what I think is the most fascinating part of your book. It is called The Enigma Files.
Right. I think the reason they had to suppress my book was because after laying a very credible foundation for the science and history of remote viewing, I then went into the Enigma files, which basically is that every single one of these military government-trained remote viewers at one time or another had direct personal knowledge of UFOs.
Yes.
That's what they could not allow to get out in a credible manner.
Ingo Swann told me about his own personal experience in the Pentagon of doing a remote viewing target that was only latitude and longitude. And when he began to draw, it was a submarine that had a disc over or to the side of the submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was asked by the military authority sitting across from him at a desk, "You can't mean a UFO," and that Ingo responded, "Yes, I do." At that moment, they gathered up the paper, the pencils. Everybody left the room, leaving Ingo sitting there by himself.
That's right. That's right. That is a good illustration, actually, of several things. He was not tasked to go see a UFO. He was tasked to go see a submarine. And yet, when he went and viewed the submarine and there was a UFO nearby, obviously his attention was drawn to the UFO. And this is why each and every one of these SISPAS had personal knowledge of the UFOs. I have been told, and I assume that this is true, that they were never at any time tasked to go look at UFOs. Now, Linda, that only makes sense because how could the government, which for 60 years have tried to tell us that there is no such thing, order their official remote viewers to go look at something that they say doesn't exist? But when they went out looking for other things, for example, if they were tasked to go and look in the upper atmosphere for high performance and high flying aircraft to see what the Russians or the Chinese or somebody might be testing, they would go up there, they'd see these things flitting through the atmosphere, and they go take a mental look at them. And as one remote viewer told me, "They weren't us and they weren't the Russians." He said, "Those guys weren't even from the neighborhood."
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.